Welcome to Credit Exchange, your weekly podcast where we speak to the biggest newsmakers and news shapers in finance to discuss the most important topics in markets. I'm your host, Lisa Lee. This week, I'm joined by KKR's co-head of credit and capital markets, Christopher Sheldon. KKR, which started out as a private equity firm, now holds more than $700 billion in AUM, has become a powerhouse in credit. Welcome, Chris.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We just celebrate the Lunar New Year, the year of the fire horse, which means that we are about a month and a half into 2026, which has been defined by macroeconomic headline grabbers. This week, you penned your widely followed investment newsletter, where you say the current environment is less forgiving. When you say that, is it because of the macroeconomic backdrop, the potential for rising inflation, more tariff, U.S. possibly taking over Greenland, or is it something else?
Yeah, thanks, Lisa. I think it's a little bit of all of that. I think there's just a lot of uncertainty in the market. And there's a lot of the investor community that's trying to figure out what playing field they're playing on. And then you couple that with, if you look at the capital and all the credit capital that's been raised over the last, you know, 5+ years, a lot of that capital has been focused on rules-based investing.
It is less forgiving. How do you recommend to the people who work underneath you, what's the mindset that they should take?
Yeah, and that's what we did with this letter. There's been so much noise around the credit markets in general, the volatility around that, a lot of press and noise around the growth of the direct lending market and what that means for the macro, more recent news around software. And so we thought it would be just a good opportunity to sort of reboot what we are seeing in credit and how you should be approaching credit, which is why we called this letter, you know, Control Alt Credit, essentially rebooting, essentially not just for our investor base, but also internally, all of the team across KKR. And really the control is, let's control what we can control, meaning what do we know? And so you can control where you play in the capital stack. You can control the type of investments you're making, the quality of the investments. So that's going to be a big part of getting back to the basics. The alts, or the control alt part, is I think you should have flexibility to add alternatives into the mix in a diversified portfolio. And having origination and differentiated origination is going to be important because there hasn't been a lot of net new issuance. So making your own luck and creating origination is going to be super important, and that's a big focus for us. And then credit is, you know, avoiding mistakes, which is obviously the golden rule and the North Star of being a credit investor. But I do think 26 is the outperformance and the alpha is going to be driven about avoiding the mistakes rather than picking the winners.
That's an interesting point, avoiding the mistakes, because for a long time, there was a sense that you could pick winners. But this environment, you're saying, just avoid the losers. Make sure that you don't pick a credit that busts up.
No, I think so. I mean, obviously, there's going to be some winners that are going to be driving performance. But I think the major alpha for 26 and in the more developed markets, meaning the liquid loan and high yield market or the direct lending market, I think it's going to be about diversification and avoiding the losers.
So, Chris, right now, there's a lot of fear in the market and sort of new fear about artificial intelligence. Excitement as well, I should add, because there's a lot of excitement about what kind of growth it might fuel, but there's also fear about disruption. So how do you factor that into your investment thesis?
And it's been something in our investment thesis for years now. We've been talking about AI for a while. It's obviously accelerating and you're seeing that volatility and particularly around software today. It's going back to that control point of like, let's look at things that we know for certain or that you have high confidence that there's a moat around this business. And particularly with regards to software, we have a framework and we're putting a framework, or we have put a framework around all software investing where we've been focused on durable cash flows, businesses that are close to the data and controlling the data. And I think if you have quality of data and then you have quality of different systems talking to one another, that's where AI can go on top and help. But if you don't have quality of data and you don't have quality of systems interacting with each other, I think it's going to be hard for AI to disrupt or actually come in and add value. And so a big part of what we're doing in software is where are things that were close to the data. It's open heart surgery to remove these businesses or the software out of customer base. And that's the framework we've been investing in software for years now. We've avoided the annual recurring revenue, you know, where businesses were, you know, valued on multiple money and high growth.
And no EBITDA, no earnings, just revenue.
They're going to grow into it eventually. But, you know, apparently, and I think that's where you're going to see a lot more haves and have-nots and dispersion in the market. But if you look at our framework, I think our software is going to hold up pretty nicely, or at least our software exposure is going to hold up pretty nicely, even with some of this disruption. Now, I think the other thing about it is investing in debt is a lot better or a lot easier maybe than the equity because we have a maturity.
Yes, right.
And so as the business evolves, we get paid, assuming we get paid back, but as the business evolves, you can require your pay down and you don't need to lend to that business in the future. So, you know, we're taking a much shorter bet versus some of our equity colleagues.
And it's not just software. I think it's the market is sort of coming to grips with that this might be disruptive for business services, for example, insurance. And it seems to be casting a wide net, not quite what you're doing, which is looking at it specifically. So do you find this an opportunity to like buy debt that you think is undervalued or more volatile than you expect it to be because you're taking a different view than the market is?
For sure, there's going to be opportunities. I think what you're seeing is, it goes back to your first question, of which is, you know, you're getting penalized, you know, for things that are missing or there's, you know, over volatility as a result and the baby's getting thrown out with the bathwater in many instances. So there's definitely going to be opportunities to lean in on good businesses that are protected, particularly in the debt where you're forecasting the next handful of years, not the next 20 years or even 10 years. So there is just going to be an opportunity. However, it's moving so quickly in terms of the capacity of AI and the technology is moving so quickly that you constantly need to be thoughtful, pivot, re-underwrite these businesses, which is important. And in the liquid market, you have that flexibility to buy and sell and get out of situations where that thesis might have pivoted or changed. In the illiquid markets like private credit, I think the key proponent that people aren't talking enough about is the structure. You want to be able to have a structure that protects you from assets being stripped out, from cash leaking the system. And so even if you do worry that maybe it's a little less resilient, having that structure could be the key differentiator of having ball control.
And do you like private credit for that reason? Are you seeing enough strong documentations, lender protection, because most of that was stripped out of the leveraged loan and high yield market? And I was hearing reports and hearing from investors and also lenders that this private credit market was eroding and going more the way of public credit markets. Or do you still find that there are situations, or maybe KKR itself, where you insist on having more lender protection?
Yeah, and private credit is no longer defined as just the direct lending market. And I think what you're seeing now is evolution of that private credit market to much, much larger. And it's investment grade to below investment grade. It's corporate to asset-based finance. It's senior to subordinated. And it's even debt to structured equity. So I think where you're seeing more pressure on the documentation and the structures are where there's a supply and demand imbalance. And we haven't seen the real net new issuance grow and the M&A activity, just given all the uncertainty in the market. So right now, as private credit or direct lending is becoming a permanent asset allocation, what we've seen is a shift to, rather than paying out that income and distributing that income to our investors, they're asking us to reinvest it.
Oh, that's interesting.
And so when you don't have that issuance to suck up that capital coming in addition to the income, you're getting this supply and demand imbalance. So to answer your question, the reality is direct lending, there's a supply and demand imbalance, so there's not enough deal flow necessarily. So structures are feeling pressure. If you go to regions like Asia, you're getting structures you want. If you're getting parts of asset-based finance, you're getting structures you want. If you're going to private IG, you're getting a lot of times structures that you're protecting yourself. And then probably where the supply and demand is the other way in the favor of a lender is in this capital solutions and structured equity, which is really taking the place of minority equity, just because what we're seeing dispersion in the liquid credit markets, you're also seeing the dispersion in the public equity markets. And so there's a lot of companies, good businesses that need growth capital that don't want to raise equity capital at dilutive levels or these low multiples. So you're seeing a lot of demand for that type of capital.
One of the things I found really interesting in your newsletter was like your point that origination, the ability to originate is going to matter. Can you explain that? Do you mean in this private credit asset class, originate yourself, or do you mean something else? I would love to understand your thoughts.
It's a little bit of everything. It's making your own luck. It's don't be complacent. Don't wait for the issuance to come to you. Go create origination that you want. And that can be in the liquid markets where you've been lending to a solid business for 5, 10, 15 years. Go to that owner, go to that banker and say, I would like to do the next deal. Or you can warrant incremental debt on your business. So create your own new issuance in the liquid market. Create your own issuance in the private credit markets, both whether that be direct lending to private IG. And it really is leveraging all the resources across KKR in our case, where it's educating our private equity professionals, our infrastructure equity professionals, in terms of what we're looking for, the types of risk we're looking for. And as you're meeting with bankers, companies, owners of businesses, to make sure you're offering a full suite of menu that we can solve their problems. And it works in a culture like ours, where it's one P&L across the firm. It's a little bit harder when, you know, other institutions where you may be siloed by incentives in different pools. So that's what I mean about harvesting all the network that we have and creating your own origination. And as a result, what usually happens when you create your own origination is you get better structures, you're attacking the businesses that you like and want, and you're building diversified portfolios.
Now, you mentioned that you have to have certain structure, but do you have to have size to do that as well? Can someone smaller mimic this, or is it something only someone like KKR with $700 billion in AUM can do?
It's hard for the smaller. If it was Chris Sheldon Capital, it'd be very hard for me to go source a lot of this origination we're seeing. And so I do think scale, breadth, with that culture leads to differentiated origination. And it also leads to the better understanding of risk, reward, and relative value. And so a big push that we've been talking to our investor base about, and a big thing trend we're also seeing, is building multi-asset, both liquid and illiquid portfolios. And we're seeing less of our investor base saying, here's capital just for the loan market, or just for the high yield bond market, or just for the direct lending market. We're seeing them come with scale and saying, here's capital for the credit market, both investment grade to high yield, liquid to illiquid, asset based to corporate, and you guys do the relative value and figure out the portfolio construction.
And when you do the relative value, do you find that that prompts you to put more into illiquid assets right now?
We are seeing in certain pockets, just given where spreads are, the lack of new issuance in the liquid markets and activity, we are seeing an illiquidity premium in the private markets. And then we're seeing in parts of it, like I mentioned, parts of asset-based finance, parts of regions like Asia and capital solutions, in addition to private IG, where you're getting sort of outsized the liquidity premium.
And since you mentioned you're part of a bigger KKR, with private equity, one of the defining characteristics of the credit market recently has been a lack of supply. More demand than supply, which you mentioned in your newsletter. Is that about to change? Because I think it's hard to have this dynamic and be cautious when there's so much dollars chasing, or euros chasing after not much supply. And we won't get that until there's more of an M&A boom, LBO especially. And you hopefully sit very close to those private equity guys who are going to do the deals.
And we also sit close to it just through our third party financing across many other sponsors. We are seeing activity pick up, which is great. And the market needs it, to your point. I think a big question is the more uncertainty in geopolitical news and just, you know, the news this morning around, you know, mobilizing around our Iran or the rumors, like that doesn't help the market, right? And so I think you need some stability in the markets for that to really unleash. Now, there's some trends that we're seeing across the market which are helpful. One of those trends is if you look at the public equity market, if you've been a capital light business model, essentially your stock's been up and to the right. And if you've been a capital intensive business model, your stock's been relatively flat. So there's this big push to finance assets or move capital, more capital intensive businesses off balance sheet. And so what you're seeing is, and you're seeing a lot of activity happening now in this private IG, where you're essentially taking receivables or hard assets, or you're financing projects off balance sheet going into an investment grade contract with that counterparty, but you're getting equity treatment for that public company. And what you're seeing is a lot of times post-announcement, we've done deals for Harley Davidson, PayPal, Lenovo, Volvo, where immediately after the transaction, the stock's up. And I think happy news for the corporate, because you're financing stuff off balance sheet and you're able to create really interesting risk reward against an IG corporate in a liquid form. And I think that you'll continue to see, and we've seen that really turbo over the last couple of years, and we'll continue to see that. So that's one area where you're seeing activity really already happen. It's not necessarily M&A, but gives growth capital for these businesses to go deploy somewhere else. I almost compare it to the sale leaseback model of real estate, just different type of assets.
And then also beyond the M&A scene, what part of the world are you excited about? Because your picker is everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm excited about the U.S. Just there's a lot of capital, whether it be coming into the U.S., whether it be through, you know, our trade agreements with Korea or Japan, where I think there's going to be a lot of need for financing. I'm excited about Europe. You're not seeing as much volatility of what you're seeing going on in Europe. I would say Asia more broadly, although small relative to the global credit markets, I think is going to be too big to ignore in a handful of years. So we're spending a ton of time and resources making sure we have a first mover advantage there. Right now, there's not enough capital relative to private equity capital that's been raised. And 80% of the financing is done by banks.
Because I was going to say, in Asia, the banks are so much more dominant than in even Europe or in the US. It seems hard for private credit to make much inroads. But you're seeing that change?
I think that is going to change as private equity grows in that region, in broader Pan-Asia. And a big part of it is the banks are only willing to finance into a certain box. And I think if you want to be flexible and nimble and provide a solution for that sponsor, you need to go outside that box. And I think that's where the private capital comes in. It reminds me of Europe 20 years ago. I think it's a trend that's going. Now, it's very hard to go cover Pan-Asia, a lot of different jurisdictions, a lot of different cultures, obviously. And I think we're leveraging that culture of KKR, where we already have 12 offices across the region. We've been in the region with private equity, infrastructure, and real estate for decades. We've been there for credit for decades. So I think we have a first mover advantage, but there you're seeing it's a good diversification for the portfolio. You're also getting a yield pickup as a result.
One thing I want to also touch on is your call on defaults. You said there's sort of a rolling recession, which I think is an interesting point, that it's been, you're thinking that there's elevated defaults for the last couple of years and in different sectors, rather than we've been going well and then we have a default cycle. And, you know, last year we had a number of big high profile names that defaulted, and Jamie Dimon famously called them cockroaches, and that gave spooked investors quite a bit. So when you look at the distress landscape, I know that's your name, but could you explain a bit more what you mean? And should we expect the same level of defaults? And are you more worried about defaults in public markets or private markets?
Yeah. And I think that the default statistics are a little bit different depending on the market you're talking about, right? And so I think where you're going to see elevated defaults are where, you know, the leverage has increased and it's really financing below investment grade sponsors and private equity. And where those two markets are, where we've sort of seen this elevated defaults is in syndicated loan market.
Yes, leveraged loans.
And the direct lending market. I don't think you're going to see a big spike in either of those markets, although I do think you're going to have an elevated level of what we've been seeing, which is this rolling recession. So unlike previous periods of volatility or recessionary periods, it was a shock on the system for all sectors, whether it be going back to, you know, the GFC, the tech bubble in 2001, or even COVID, right? It was a shock on all businesses, all sectors. What we've been seeing is, you know, paper packaging, chemicals, you know, building materials are declining now. There's a lot of sectors that have been in a recession already, and some of them are coming out, some of them are bottoming. And so I don't envision a big shock on all sectors. And there's probably some that have been overearning also. So to my point, if the syndicated loan market has been sort of close to 4% of default rates, I kind of envision this rolling recession continuing. It seems like the press and what we read about is just we've been historically low default rates. And that may be the case in the high yield bond market, but the high yield bond market is no longer the junk bond market.
It really has changed, right?
Double D, it's the shortest duration market we've seen. So I think we're just going to be in this elevated level versus a big spike. And that's why I do think 26 returns are going to be driven about making sure you avoid some of those big flagship defaults that you see.
And are there certain sectors now you're avoiding because you think that's a sector that's going to sort of roll into a recession? And vice versa, what's come out of it, as you've said, some have come out of this recession. So there might be
opportunities.
Some overhang opportunities, right? Because investors might feel the overhang. Oh, I just got burned, so I don't want to lend there. But the sector's great. If you could share with us what they are.
I think we're keeping it simple. We're keeping it high quality. I do think in the areas where there is elevated defaults, like the syndicated loan market and the direct lending market more broadly, diversification is your friend. I think if you should be avoiding secular decliners. I think you should be thinking about some of the cyclicals and where they are in the cycle. But the interesting stat is, you know, 40% of the defaults in the syndicated loan market last year were repeat offenders. They defaulted twice. And so to me, those are just secular decliners or just bad businesses that didn't have moats. And so I do think there's going to be opportunity to catch some of this wave back up in terms of sectors that have been in the bottom. Like I said, software is one to focus on. I think there's been some overly dispersion there where I think there's going to be some opportunities. I think there's also going to be some opportunities to de-risk there too. So I think we're pretty open to all sectors, but I do think that diversification is your friend in many ways, particularly in the markets that have the supply and demand imbalance.
Let's just focus on the direct lending market, because right now there's regulators are looking more into it. It's just had such big growth. And I think once you grow as big as it has, there's a lot of questions about Is there safety? Do investors know what they're getting? Retail money is going into it. And you have PIC and you have questions about marks and ratings. Are you worried about all about that market, or are you pretty sanguine?
I mean, it's been growing for a decade plus. And, you know, I think people are, you know, I think what we read about is like it just had this massive growth the last couple of years. The reality is it's been growing for a long period of time. And if you think about the size of that market, you know, the numbers out there are 1.9 trillion. You put that in context of a 45 trillion credit market across investment grade down to below investment grade, corporate to asset-based finance, it's still relatively small. So, you know, the terms out there that this is there's systemic risk, I don't buy that at all. But I do think that, you know, where there's a supply and demand imbalance, you have to be careful. And you have to stick to your knitting and control what you control and make sure you're picking the right credits. And I do think diversification in that market is important. And I think where you're going, what you're going to see in that market is a lot of dispersion by manager's performance as this plays out. And I think a big part of that is either making bad investments or making credit mistakes. But I think it's more importantly, it's concentrated bets.
Don't concentrate too much in this market.
If you're earning 9 to 10%, cash on cash from the income, and your diversified portfolio at 1% or less position size, you have to make a lot of mistakes to go negative return. But if you're taking 3, 4, 5% position sizes, that's where you get one of those wrong or two of those wrong, that can be painful. And so I think that goes back to my earlier point of like having the origination is going to be super important where you're not forced to buy what's on offer, that you can actually go create your own origination.
So the landscape that you're painting for us is one that's slightly troubled, but lots of opportunities. What is your worry, the downside case?
Yeah, I mean, I'm painting a scenario where it's slightly troubled may not be the term I'd use. I'd say it's
cautious.
It's like Adult Swim only.
Okay, like that. Adult Swim only.
You have to be well-versed. You have to have scale. You have to create your own origination. And your environment, that's hard, right? You've had elevated defaults, increasing downgrades, and spreads tightening. That's a tough recipe. And so the more flexibility you have, the more ways to win. The more scale and breadth and origination you have, the more ways to win. I do think what makes me nervous to answer your question or what goes wrong is continued uncertainty in the market that doesn't create this supply. You have the spreads going tighter as a result of that. And, you know, there's a lot more concern around the market where flows come out. Right now, we're still seeing flows come into the private credit market. And you're starting to see some flows come out on the wealth side. But I think most of those structures are protected where there's 5% caps in terms of redemptions per quarter. So there's not a run on that, those vehicles. But if that sustains for long periods of time, you know, there may be a little bit more volatility in the market.
So I've asked you all the questions that I found interesting in your letter, but maybe there's something you wish, like I think this is one of the most critical things, and she never broached the topic. So on my final question, what would that be? What else should we have been talking about on this podcast?
The one thing that I think that we should be talking about or just reiterate is that the private credit market is not just the direct lending market. And I think that is, I know you know that, but I know there's still a lot of people that associate private credit with direct lending. And direct lending is just a portion of it. And the bigger part of the private credit market is all the asset-based finance. It's financing the real-world economy, whether it be consumer loans to resi loans to hard assets like aircraft or commercial lending. Music, intellectual property, That is a huge growing market. And I think that is a great diversifier to portfolios today when people are building out their private credit allocation and they're worried about what's going on in the real economy, that you can actually get a lot of incremental yield by adding this in addition to diversifying your portfolio away. And not a lot of people are talking about that.
No, they're not. And so how big do you think this market could get?
I mean, that market is already multiples the size of the direct lending market. You know, and I think if you step back, that was very hard 5 years ago to get for an investor to get that on in scale, right? Because there's all these specialty finance managers that just did aircraft or just did music IP or just did consumer loans. But now you're seeing a handful of us that can actually do the rel val across all the different asset types. And so as an investor or a large public pension or insurance, now you can go to one or two people and get diversified income, and you can do that in scale and you can do that in ease. And that's a major change of the evolution of the credit markets over the last 5 years. And a big part of that is increased pressures on the banks, pushing those assets off to people like us. They're still financing, the banks are still financing, so we still need them as partners. But I think that is something that a lot of the press, a lot of our investor base is not talking about.
Okay, well, we'll talk about it. And maybe the next time you come on, we can talk just about that, because I think there's so much to unpack there too, because this is such a big growing part of credit markets and also just the way the economy is being financed. But thank you so much for being with us, Chris. This has been a great conversation, as always.
Great. Well, it's good to see you.
And to our audience, thank you so much for joining us. Do follow us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This has been Lisa Lee.